Braves, Bulldogs, Falcons, Yellow Jackets, Hawks, Eagles. From the heart of Georgia, it's the Bill Shank Show.
Hour number three of our broadcast. Welcome back. Thank you very much for being with us. I'm Bill Shanks with Russ Brown. We are here at the Taco Shed in Warner Robins, right next to the Museum of Aviation, where we invite you to come tonight for some tacos. It's Taco Tuesday. Great tacos on the menu. Earlier today, Russ had the taco that will be the May Taco Special, which will be a BLT taco with fried green tomatoes in there. I had my normal go-to, which is the Shipwreck, and enjoyed that immensely. And we invite you to come. If you've never been here, they are soft shell tacos, great combinations, whether it's chicken or beef or scrimps, they've got them here. Veggie tacos as well, very, very good. They've got chips and queso. They've got quesadillas. They've got great food here at the Taco Shed, including in the morning with breakfast burritos. They're open at 6 a.m. Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. on Saturday, and they close at 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday. We're watching kind of a replay of the Braves game from last night against San Diego. In the replay, the Braves had just taken Mike Soroka out. We were talking a little bit ago about the decision to do that. Soroka was pitching very well, six innings, one run, eight strikeouts, in complete control of the game, and Bryce Sicker took him out, and thankfully it worked out. Josh Tomlin came in the seventh inning and did well, and he did well in the eighth inning as well. Sicker said that he pretty much had in his mind when Tomlin took the field that as long as everything went okay, Josh Tomlin was going to pitch two innings. But what is Josh Tomlin really? A starting pitcher who is now in the bullpen because he's not good enough to be a starting pitcher anymore. What did back in the day, what were relievers? Relievers were guys who were not good enough to be one of the main starting pitchers, and therefore they went to the bullpen. They were good enough to be on the staff. It's not like they were not very good at all, but they were just not good compared to the people who were in the rotation, and therefore they went to the bullpen. Well, Josh Tomlin has proved to be a very valuable player so far for this team, which has been a surprise to me. He was signed late in spring training. I think he had that last game ever at Disney. That's a tribute question for you. And he was able to make the team out of spring training because they kind of needed some help, if you remember, with Foltynewicz and Gausman both on the injured list. And Tomlin was not going to be a starting pitcher. He was only going to be a reliever. But I think to have that kind of player that has starting experience in your bullpen is almost required now. And it's almost too, Russ, because of the way the game has gone, where there's so many young pitchers who come up, there are enough of those types of Josh Tomlins that we could probably find one on three-quarters of the teams in baseball of pitchers who have been in a rotation at some point in time and are no longer in rotation, therefore have to go to the bullpen. I think we've seen that over the years, but I think that's kind of another residual effect of what we've seen with the game changing. But yeah, to me, you got to have it these days. You got to have somebody who can go two or three innings, don't you?
Yeah, and we were talking about it during the break, and you were wondering if, you know, we might see Matt Whistler tonight for the Padres. And
correct,
there's a guy that was in the Braves rotation not that long ago, and now he's a bullpen piece for the Padres. And I think, you know, as the numbers start to catch up to the game, I guess is the best way to put it. And you've talked about a bridge pitcher. I think you're going to see more and more guys like that, to where, I mean, you can't just start matching up lefty-righty with, you know, two outs in the sixth inning. You're going to blow through your pen. You're going to be in deep trouble if you go into extra innings doing stuff like that. And you're really going to need that pitcher that can go through the lineup, you know, at least one time or in the National League till his spot in the order comes up, and go out there and pitch two or three innings. And I think you'll start to see that. And a lot of people are wondering if the Braves are going to do that with the Sean Newcomb, or maybe Touki Toussaint might be falling into that category as well. But I think you're going to start to see that, because if you've got starters going again, sometimes in some instances these guys aren't even getting out of the fifth inning. That's a lot of innings for the bullpen to clean up. And if you can have two or three guys in your bullpen that can come in on a nightly basis and do what Josh Tomlin did last night. I mean, I don't think Tomlin would be available tonight after throwing those two innings last night. So you almost need another one, you know, to where Tomlin could get his rest, and then you got another guy that could go out and do it tonight. But I think you'll see more of that as the game progresses, I guess you could say, if that's how you see it.
Progress.
You ever seen the quarterback throw the interception and you knew it right when the ball came out of his hand? The second I said progress, that's kind of how it felt.
I don't know exactly whether it's progression or regression.
Right.
I don't know. It's a changing sport. All sports have changed a little bit. Quarterbacks can't be touched. Mm-hmm. Basketball is different, right, from what it was.
Very different.
Very different from what it was. So, I mean, you're seeing a lot of changes that is progression in that. And progression doesn't necessarily mean a positive thing. that's very subjective, I guess, on whether or not you want to call it a positive. But it's an evolution. Maybe evolution is a different term that can be used to describe just the changing of the game, of how it is different now than it was. Which, you know what, I'm sure in 30 years from now it'll be different than it is today. All sports will be a little bit different. I don't know what, but I'm sure I don't think we ever could have imagined even 3 years ago that the types of terms we talk about when it comes to baseball are that prevalent. We knew about them. We had heard about launch angle or exit velocity, but now it is even more. You're not going to go too many games without seeing a long home run be measured by exit velocity, which was never talked about 3 years ago. I guarantee you there's no broadcast from the 2016 Braves where they talked about exit velocity. I didn't hear it until I heard about Ronald Acuna. That's the first time I ever heard it.
Right. And I think there's a fear, too, that if you're not doing it like everybody else and it doesn't work, you know, you're going to get killed for it. And people are just afraid to be different. And I think that you hear in the NFL, you hear it all the time. It's a copycat league.
Mm-hmm.
I think baseball's turned into that. I mean, you know, 6 years ago, how many teams shifted so dramatically? Now you see everybody doing it pitch to pitch because – you know, if you're not doing it, you're not having success doing it, then people are going to say you're not effective. You're not doing your homework. You're not playing the game the way it's supposed to be played, and that's just kind of the way it evolves.
How many times we've seen now in baseball where they cut to a player in the field and they got a little card in their hand looking at their notes about where to play the certain players? That didn't happen, 2 years ago that didn't happen. Remember last year Joe West tried to get it stopped. Remember that? He kicked the player out, I believe, didn't he? And then he was like, hold on, can we use these or not? And they were like, the whole team's got them, Joe. You need to come up with the times. But he hadn't been addressed with that. It hadn't been talked about whether or not that was because they called it like a foreign object or whatever they wanted to describe it. So it is an evolution of the game that is not necessarily positive, but it is different from what it used to be. We were talking about roster sizes beforehand. I'm sure people can't fathom the younger generation of the fact that there was a 10-man pitching staff. That's all you had. And you were here's the scary thing. You were lucky if you had one lefty starter and one lefty reliever. It was like uncommon almost to have more than one. Like, wow, I remember one time the Braves signed actually Pete Falcone and Terry Forster the same year in 1983. I love it when I tell these stories that were 36 years old. But they were two lefty pitchers that and you know, I'm trying to think of how long, but there was like a long period of time where the Braves went without a lefty starting pitcher. They didn't have one of the whole staff. And then it was just a drought when it came to lefty starting pitchers. And then I think Zane Smith was the one who kind of nipped that in the bud. But for a while they went from like Larry McWilliams to Ken Daly, and then Zane Smith was like the next one, but there was a stretch in there. I think it was mainly the 70s, to be honest with you, where I'm telling you, I don't think they had a lefty. I think they had like less than 10 starts by a lefty pitcher in 1 year, something of that nature, you know, which was probably not that all uncommon compared to now. Now, obviously, you're finding more lefty pitchers, but it's just a different game, and that's normal, you know. As you get older, you look. Our fathers and grandfathers watched different games when they watched sports on a regular basis. They think about my grandfather has been dead since 1972. So I was 2 years old, and so he's been dead 47 years. And he was a baseball player in the old Georgia Florida League. And I wonder, someone like him, you know, if they came back to life and saw what the game of baseball is now, how he'd feel about it. because it's like you can't. He'd probably be shocked at things like a shortstop playing in short right field or something crazy like that, or the fact that no pitcher can go. I can't imagine what those old guys would think about pitchers not being able to go 100 pitches or more than 100 pitches or something like that. They'd be flabbergasted at how the game has changed, and that's just, you know, that's what getting old's all about, I guess. Derek Bass would be able to tell us about that, right? Oh yeah, I'm older than you.
By a little bit, yeah. You got me.
About what? March to November, right?
November. That's right.
So 8 months.
So I bet managers got tossed more back in the day too than they do now.
Because they didn't have replay.
Replay. There you go.
That's another thing. But people had to think that replay was coming, though, didn't they? They had. I remember Pete Manwaring writing an article in the Braves Illustrated like in 1980, and he talked about interleague play, which was always talked about. You know, should the American League play the National League? The DH was always discussed, and I think replay as television has just gotten more prevalent in our lives, or video, I should say, not TV. It became inevitable.
Yeah, but they still get it wrong on that sometimes.
They do.
I've seen it.
They do.
You know.
Yeah. Well, it's that's frustrating. That's not good when they get it wrong.
Especially
because
when it doesn't go our way.
Most yeah.
of the time.
Like Tyler Simmons was onside against Alabama. There's that.
Well, I mean.
Yeah.
I can't comment on that.
Yeah. No, you can't. But yeah, it's
sticking with the Braves right now.
Well, the game's changed. By the way, is your head coach, is he alive? Did he survive his hip surgery?
Oh yeah, he was at the office the next day.
The next day?
Yeah, he's doing just fine.
Wow, he's afraid somebody's going to get his place in
his
office.
His old hip got offered a head coaching job. I mean, he wanted to go there. I had to say.
Oh, I almost did a spit take right there, didn't I?
I mean,
I came close.
I picked a good time to say that.
That was good. That was good. Yeah. No, he's okay. He'll be fine.
I mean, we pulled the Kirby, too, though, so, you know.
You did?
You remember?
We pulled that bad, huh?
We pulled the Kirby, the fake punt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you remember that?
That was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Not as bad as ours.
No, it wasn't. That's why it's called the Kirby.
The Kirby. Wait, so when you don't spike it, it's called the Rick, then when you
is Rick gone now?
He's on television. He's going to be a TV star.
What?
ACC Network.
ACC, good. We don't have to see him.
No, we don't have to
That's
watch
good.
It.
Unless you're a Georgia Tech fan. Georgia Tech.
Russ is debating that. He's not sure.
I'm a Tech fan because of Tobias Oliver. Went to Northside. Got a hometown kid there.
Good for you.
Yeah. Is he going to start?
Russ has got such a bad attitude right now. I don't know. I don't know. Shai Wirtz is the highest-rated quarterback returning in the Sun Belt. I know that. You know who he plays for?
All right, Russ. Let me ask you a question.
Can I take the rest
and
of the
not
day
being
off?
Mean or nothing.
Sure,
but
Bill. We got
Who's the biggest name in the NFL to come from Georgia Southern? I'm not being mean. I'm just simply
asking. Jerick McKinnon. You mean right now?
Just didn't. Yeah. Jerick, overall
or
well,
ever?
Oh, ever.
Ever. Well,
just because I don't know, I'm not.
Well, Earthwind Moreland was won a Super Bowl with the Patriots.
Who?
Defensive back, Earthwind Moreland.
Okay.
You've got Adrian Peterson had a nice little run with the Bears, but right now Jerick McKinnon's one of the highest paid running backs in the NFL.
Adrian Peterson.
Not the guy that went to Oklahoma.
Okay.
The real one.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. The other Adrian Peterson.
He had a good run though, didn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah. Chicago.
And Adrian Peterson's a great player.
Yeah.
Oh my God, he was unbelievable.
You know, three of our running backs play for are on the 49ers right now. Uh-huh. Jerick McKinnon, Matt Breida, and Wesley Fields. Yeah. I might have to kind of moonlight as a 49ers.
Oh, player. Gross.
Oh, my.
That's so gross, Russ. Wow. You never thought you'd say
that. No, worse. I never thought I'd say that.
That's worse biggest. Than me wearing the Dodger hat.
It probably, yeah, because I hated that team when I was a kid.
Hated it. Hated with Joe Montana.
Passion. Oh, my God.
They killed the Falcons.
And here's one for you that you won't remember, though, that makes my 49ers hate even worse, is the last game ever for O.J. Simpson. It was in Atlanta, Fulton County Stadium, against the Falcons as a 49er.
Really?
Yeah. Then he went to a wood chopping class.
That's So that was his last game ever, though, was in Fulton County
Fulton
Stadium?
Fulton County Stadium.
Yeah. Really?
It sure was. I remember that. And I hated the 49ers because they were beating the heck out of us when they were bad.
They used to kill us.
When they were bad, they were beating the heck out of us. And then Joe Montana came, you know, after being Rudy's teammate at Notre Dame.
Montana, you gotta like Montana though. He was.
I hated Montana.
I gained a lot more respect for him when he talked about how fake the movie Rudy was.
No, lied. No, I hated Montana. Are you kidding? He carved the Falcons up.
I know.
Yes, he did.
That was awful.
But he didn't do it in a showboat kind of a way, though.
No, he just won 49-3 every week.
He would just win.
There's not much dominance like the 49ers' dominance of the Atlanta Falcons when Montana was the quarterback.
That's right. It's hard to showboat when you're bored, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, seriously, how many times do you think – let's look that up. Oh. Joe Montana, would they have that, Russ? Joe Montana versus his record versus the team? I mean, it's got to be. Well, let's predict that. I would say, 10 years, Russ, maybe? So we're talking about 20 games. I would say 17-3.
I've got it here. You want me to tell you?
Yep. Am I close?
You're pretty close.
I said 17-3. What are you saying?
It was 19 games.
19 games. So we were
15-4.
Are you serious right about now? It's 15-4.
Is it 15-4?
Yeah.
Hey, how about that?
How about that? All good right. For you, Derek Bass.
I win a taco.
Hey, win a taco.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks.
15-4.
I'll give my free taco.
But how bad is that the best he did against any team in the NFL?
He was 6-0 against Cincinnati.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, with two of those being in the Super Bowl.
Right.
6-0 against the Oilers, 5-0 against the Cowboys. But in terms of total wins, 6 is the most outside. No, 15-4 against the Saints.
So the same record against
No, we were 14-5.
Oh, 14. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, we were 14-5.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he was better against the Saints.
That's right. Take that, New Orleans.
God. They were absolutely – it was awful. That was a dreaded week when you would watch the Falcons play the 49ers.
You knew it was
coming.
Yeah.
It was just –
usually down by 21 at half, at least.
So you basically won every what? So 20 games, 19 games, which is what, 9.5 years, you won every 2 years, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I guarantee you none of those was a Candlestick. Maybe one.
We didn't even win out there.
We never went out there. No, we never went out there. That was, and I'm sure Steve Young wasn't too much worse against the Falcons. They if we really should hate one team for beating us,
it's the
49ers. The Saints' record is probably all time, probably close to 500, don't you think? But as far as us getting killed by one team. Which, the 49ers did that to a lot of teams. Sure. Let's be honest. That was not just the Falcons that had to deal with that.
The 80s were not good to the Falcons.
No, neither were the 90s. Until the 98 season.
So I got to get Russ a 49ers jersey for Christmas? Is that what you're saying?
Gross.
As long as it says McKinnon on the back.
Okay.
Or Breida.
Breida.
Or Fields.
We could put a Georgia Southern logo on the front, maybe.
That'd be pretty sweet.
Wow. Yeah.
I'd wear that on the sidelines. How about that?
Dang, man.
You get the patch, and I'll get the jersey, and then you can have a...
We might be able to pull this off.
One of a kind.
Yeah.
That's gross. I can't believe you'd wear a 49ers jersey. That's so awful. My Lord.
You got to post it on Sundays.
Oh.
You watch it.
You'll do anything to make a co-host at midday happy, won't you? Wearing a 49ers jersey. Oh, my gosh. He's been infecting you with 49ers-isms.
No, they love our running backs, man.
Yeah. I understand. Yeah. Sucking up to the Georgia Southern, so that's okay. Might as well. If you're going to do that. This soul won't be to Daniel. Hey, speaking of mac and cheese, how's that mac and cheese taco coming?
I haven't gotten back there.
I asked one of your associates, and they said, yes, mac and cheese and ham would be good.
Let's go bacon. No ham.
I go with ham. I go with ham. I like ham. I think isn't ham in some mac and cheese dishes, I believe?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Is bacon in some mac and cheese dishes?
You would, yeah. You hope so. It's going to be. If it's here, it's going to be.
Yeah. I'm a vegetarian. I just go with cheese.
Vegetarian.
I'm a short-term vegetarian. Like a day and a half. All right, we're going to take a break. Come back. We are talking sports, having fun, leading up to Braves baseball at 6:05. We're at the Taco Shed in Warner Robins. You want to give another taco away or not?
Yeah, let's do it. You got an out. You got 45 minutes.
What are we going to say? Let them come in and say 49ers suck.
49ers suck.
No, well, slow down.
Oh.
How about Joe Montana sucks?
Well, I don't know. He was in that game with Rudy.
I mean, other than the fact that he didn't suck, but, you know.
he never sucked. He didn't suck the last game he played, even though he was probably crippled, couldn't walk. And he got the girl at the end in the daggum commercial with the shaving cream. Remember her? How's she looking these days? Has she aged gracefully since Russ loves to look at old women?
Well, that's you. That's not me.
So a free oyster taco and a free BLT taco.
You still have oysters in there?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Free oyster taco and a free BLT taco with green tomatoes.
Okay.
If you say...
Mets suck.
The Mets suck. Okay.
Is that good?
I like that.
That'd be good. All right, we'll take a break. Come on in and get your free taco here at the Taco Shed. First person in to say Mets suck gets a free oyster and BLT.
With fried green
taco.
Tomato. Yep.
All in one or two different ones?
Two different tacos.
Okay. Back with more here on this Tuesday right after this. Back on the broadcast from the Taco Shed here in Warner Robins near the Museum of Aviation. Thank you very much for being with us here. Come on in. Get you a taco. Let's go back to the phone lines here, 478-646-ESPN. Matthew and Roberta, hello.
Hey, guys. How's it going today?
Going well. Thank you, sir.
All right. Well, I was listening to you earlier, and I got to thinking about the Mike Soroka pulling him out of the game last night. It's hard to agree with that decision, I guess, given the fact that he had just struck out the side, including a beautiful 96 mile an hour on the corner to Machado. I think that was the inning prior to him coming out. But I think with his spot coming up in the next inning in the lineup, I think that is probably the only reason to pull him. But just and what I would say is, being the fact that he is as a professional has never pitched more than I think 152 or 53 innings in a complete season, and you know, with his age and his concerns as far as prior injuries, I think it was a good decision from Snitker. And I don't think you could argue both ways, but I think that it was a good decision, and it was something probably, you know, based on the, you know, playing him out throughout the stretch of the rest of the year. So I just wanted to say that I actually do agree with that decision, even though he was pitching a masterpiece, really. But
yeah, he was pitching great. You know, I think, and Snit said this too, you know, he had 109 pitches last Wednesday against the Reds. Yeah. And, you know, they're just not going to put too much on these kids. He's still a young guy, 22 years old, and that's just the way the game is. So it didn't surprise me at all when he, especially when the bases were loaded and an opportunity came up to try to get more runs to make that lead a better lead. I wasn't surprised by that at all. I mean, again, would I have left him in? Probably, but I definitely understand. It's just the way the game is. I mean, I remember when like 5-6 years ago when this was happening, I was screaming, hollering, what are they doing, blaming Freddie Gonzalez. But obviously, this is what the game has become, where these pitchers are coddled to a certain extent and not overextended, I guess is the way to put it.
Yes, I agree with that. And also, you know, in his brief career in the major leagues, I think he's only – last night was the third of his career quality starts or going six innings. You know, I agree with you on that. But I have a question, and that would be, do you think that it's time for the Braves to get these young players, these young pitchers – out of the minor leagues and put them in the bullpen and give them, I mean, it can't get much worse than what it is. So get those guys up, put them in the bullpen, some of these young prospects, and see what they can do and give them that experience.
Yeah, we've talked about that a little bit, Matthew. Thank you for your call throughout the day of what they should do, whether it's to bring up now or to – I think it would be even more beneficial if they know, for example, let's just take Colby Allard as an example. If Colby Allard is not in their plan to be a starting pitcher for Atlanta, and I'm not talking about a spot starter or someone who can come up and make a start, someone who's going to be a long-term starter for the Braves. If he's not in their top five or even their top six or seven, but if he's like 8, 9, or 10, let's go ahead and put him in the bullpen in Gwinnett and see exactly what he can do there and then give him that opportunity in Atlanta's bullpen as well. I don't know how effective he can be against lefties. I don't know how effective he has been in his minor league career, but I just think you have to kind of play around with that. But a lot of people would go ahead and let them stay in the rotation in AAA and then move them up. I would move them around and go ahead and put them in the bullpen to see them in that setting of how they would work out and how they would perform, just to see. And you know what? You may put them out there and they're like, you know, I can't mentally prepare for this. I'm not able to do this, and say, well, you're going to go back in the rotation because you don't want to ruin their value. But if they can be effective, and that's the way to get them on that big league roster and let them be effective for your pitching staff, why not? Why wouldn't you do that? I don't know how they can't be thinking about it. It's just the approach they want to take to make that happen. I hope it's not the back and forth stuff like with Bryce Wilson last week, up for what was it, 5, 6 days, I believe.
Yeah.
And he had one relief appearance, like in mop up duty on a ninth inning, I think. That's it. I don't like that. I don't think that's doing Bryce Wilson or the Braves any good to maximize his value. That's the only thing I hope they'll shy away from. Because you know what, if the general consensus is relief pitchers are interchangeable, and you're going to try to change that by putting pitchers who you think have value in those roles, don't make them interchangeable or the same kind of pitcher that you do with Josh Tomlin. Give them value. Let them have value to you. Let them go and, you know, I still believe, whether we call it piggybacking or whatever, if we're going to have such a large pitching staff, I'm going to have two guys who can go two innings, and if my starter wets the bed in the fourth or fifth inning, then I'm going to have a Josh Tomlin or a Bryce Wilson in there who can go and get me to the bullpen. Because if not, I'm going to use my whole daggone bullpen. Well, and then, like Snicker said last week, if that happens, your problem is, if you play the next night, who's going to be available then? You're going to be in trouble. So, you know, it's interesting to see what's going on here. Back to the phones we go. John and Warner Robins joins us. Hey, John.
Hey, man. How you doing today?
Good.
I think you hit the hammer on the head on that one. I think the only way that you're going to be able to fix your bullpen internally is go through your organization, through your prospects as far as pitching-wise, and kind of comb through the ones like your Tuukka Gasson or your Colby Allard that you think that aren't really going to stick as a starter, and go ahead and thrust them into the bullpen and see what they can do. But what you don't want to do is rush that and then put, you know, one of your top, like your Ian Andersons or Kyle Wrights, in that position that's going to prohibit their development. So that's the kind of situation that we were put in now because of the inability to address the bullpen matter in the offseason. And we're kind of cuffed by the balls because the whole entire league knows how bad we need a bullpen. So, and now we're in the position where we may have to trade one of our top prospects, being Austin Riley or our top pitchers, to fix it.
Well, I hope they don't trade Austin Riley because he's getting hot, and I got worried last night when he was not in the lineup. So I'm a little worried about that. But, no, I'm with you. And because what kind of leverage do they have to get the relief pitcher? And as you said, everybody knows they need a reliever. They have no leverage. People, and John, look, you know that these opposing teams are going to try to rob the Braves of all these young pitchers. And, I mean, the price for a relief pitcher, even a middle reliever who may be good, they may say, give me Bryce Wilson. Well, why would you want to do that? Let's see if Bryce Wilson could do that job first before giving him up for someone who may be only here for a while.
Exactly. And, you know, I will say Jacob Webb last night was a bit of a breath of fresh air as far as, you know, the in-game. But, you know, we're going to need that bridge, man, that bridge to get to Jacob Webb or maybe a future closer. So, you know, it's we're handcuffed, you know. We're in the situation that we are in now because of the inability to adjust the bullpen during the offseason. But I just, like you just said, I hope they don't get to, you know, where we feel too desperate to where we have to go out there and get somebody just for the sake of getting a name in there. You know what I'm saying?
Right, absolutely. No, and you know what? Grant Dayton has been called up for tonight's game, and let's see what he can do. Let's see if he's going to be a possibility for this pen. I mean, he's had some success, not much, but some success in his 2 years in the big leagues with the Dodgers before he got hurt. He did well in his 5 games in AAA, so maybe they can fix it with the internal options. John, thank you. We appreciate it very much. As always, 478-646-ESPN is our number. If you want to join us, we can. We're talking a lot of baseball here today, obviously, leading up to Braves baseball and looking at all the internal options. Hey, real quick, we want to bring in Jared Davis from Pruitt Air
Hot
Conditioning.
Hot cold, baby.
Hot cold, baby. How about that now? And you know what I'd like to, along with the hot cold, call the man.
Yeah, that was a happy accident.
Yeah, how? Yeah. Is that from the Andy Griffith show?
Yep, I was watching Andy Griffith. And I was like, I kind of like that. So I may or may not have borrowed that.
I knew what it was from, though. I knew it had to be from an Andy Griffith show. That's one of the best episodes when Aunt B had that daggum broken freezer out there.
Just call the man,
call
Aunt
the
B.
man. Call the man. She's trying to save money, and Andy making more money than anybody in that damn town next to Floyd, you know? How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
We're doing great. Good to have you here. Good to have you on with us. We appreciate it very much. And now's the time where people are yanking that air conditioner up a little bit, aren't they?
It is definitely heating up, that's for sure.
So your call is coming in a little bit more regularly now?
Yeah, it's been pretty busy, but that's good. That's good. We kind of have to take it when we can get it. So
sure. And I know you guys try to really push about the maintenance plan to prevent things that may be happening, right?
We do. We basically run those twice a year. So we'll send out cards and kind of schedule it for you. Basically, all you have to do is be there. So we handle all the scheduling and all that stuff. So makes it easy.
What's the normal lifespan for an AC unit?
They say 10 to 15 years industry-wide, no matter what brand you get. But it's like anything else. You could patch it as long as you want to. It's just a matter of when it gets to the point where it's not worth it. You're not getting your return on that investment anymore.
Right,
so.
Right. The maintenance, though, is important in that regard.
Yeah,
to
absolutely.
Keep it as long as you can.
A lot of the companies now mandate, you know, which they typically don't check this, but usually they can say if you haven't had it maintained twice a year, that they won't cover the warranty anymore.
Oh, so, really? Wow.
A lot of the companies mandate that now. So,
well, if you have any question that Jared or any member of his staff can answer, give him a call, 225-4921. All right?
That's right. The other number, 953-4986.
Okay. All right. And y'all cover the entire listing.
We
area,
do.
Don't
we,
you?
Yeah, we're mostly in Bibb County, Houston County, and Peach County. We're easing into like Unadilla and that area now as well.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Well, just keep Pruitt in mind. Y'all seen the television commercials on as well. Jared, he's the one in the TV commercial. He's right here. He's a superstar. Yeah, you probably get recognized more than I do because you're on 13 and I'm on 41.
I do. It's amazing how if you pay somebody enough money, they'll let you be on TV. So.
No, those are good commercials. And, I mean, you've got a good little slogan there. I like that.
Again, that was an accident, but sometimes you just got to recognize.
How did that happen? How that
so we
happen?
Had one of those billboards, I think it was on Watson at the time, that would flip back and forth, and
okay.
We wanted the whole billboard, and so that's the only way we figured out how to do it. It was hot on one side, cold on the other side, and it kind of just
took off.
Grew from there.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's great. That is great. Well, it's a good spot, and it's great for us to have the hot cold segment on our show because it gives us another reason to talk about the bullpen.
Oh, Lordy mercy. Yeah. I've been listening a little bit on the way here, and I'm glad I wasn't snit last night because as soon as I saw who was coming up to bat, I was like, no, don't take him out. Don't take him out. But it worked out fine. So that's why he makes the money and I sell air conditioners.
Tough decision though, wasn't it?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what I know what I'd have done because I was screaming, "Don't take him out! Don't take him out!" Because that's one of the best like full games I've seen all year out of any of our pitchers.
Right.
So I was really really concerned that was going to go south, but it worked out. So that's good for him.
It's another kind of residue of having a bad bullpen, though, of feeling like you want to go ahead and try to go for those extra runs. And some people like us, I think we all agree, we would have taken him out. I mean, we would have kept him in there rather and not gone for the extra runs where, you know, a lot of times your gut's going to tell you, man, if I can get that lead from two runs to four runs, take it.
Well, and I think if there wasn't, if there was what, two outs already? Mm-hmm. I think if there had been only one out, maybe I would have been more tempted to do that. But I don't know. That's why he makes the big bucks and I don't.
Right. Yeah. It's a tough call. He makes probably 100 of those per night.
Yeah. You know, I always try to assume that somebody's just smarter than I am. It's kind of like the whole bullpen and signing somebody else and all that. I just assume there's people that are smarter than me behind the scenes that have a plan, or either that makes me feel better to think they have a plan.
I don't know if we're convinced of that with the Atlanta Braves right now,
yeah,
with their front office. I don't know if they convinced us of that, but we hope so.
Well, on the way here, I saw that they scratched Donaldson from the lineup tonight.
Right.
So, yes. And that was that calf. That was what he was having issues with before, right?
Yes, exactly.
So that concerns me a little bit.
You know how much $23 million divided by 162 Ooh. Is? You want to hear how much he's going to be making for Bittner being on the bench tonight?
Ugh.
You ready for this? $141,975.31.
That's not a bad deal for riding
pretty
the
good.
Pine.
Pretty good. Pretty good. Not too bad. Divided by 9 is $15,775.
You got to get paid for those calf massages, though, I guess.
I'm sure. Yeah, he probably needs that with that hair. Anyway, well, Jared, hey, thank you for stopping by.
I appreciate it.
We encourage everybody. You can go also online, PruittAC.com, PruittAC.com. And again, you could schedule an appointment with them, have them come up and call the man and let them come out and check, make sure your AC unit is ready for our weather, which is getting ready to be literally turned up a notch here in the next couple of days, I think.
Yeah, we should be hitting the 90s here pretty regular.
Yeah, so. And it'll change everything, won't it? I'll take the cooler nights, so they're kind of nice.
Yeah, it gets really good for us, though, when it stays above 70 at night. So if we can get yeah. it there, I'll be happy.
Yes, I'm sure it does. All right, Jared, thank you very much. Call Pruitt. Hot cold, baby. Call him if you have any questions, 225-4921. And the other number is?
953-4986.
There you go. Good. All right, we're going to take a break. We're at the Taco Shed in Warner Robins. We are leading you up to Braves baseball with the Braves and the Padres from SunTrust Park. We'll take a break, back with more on this Tuesday right after this. 5:45 is our time. We are here at the Taco Shed in Warner Robins. Bill Russ on the radio talking sports, leading up to Braves baseball in about 20 minutes. Back to our phones we go, 478-646-ESPN. Mike in Warner Robins. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Bill. Thanks for taking my call as always. I appreciate it.
Sir. Yes, sir.
Hey, as much as I want to talk about a 14-14 baseball team that has a problem that they haven't fixed in over 18 months, I want to talk this Falcons draft, Bill, because I'm trying to remain calm after this draft, and I didn't want to call me super negative, but I'm still frustrated and don't understand why we reached for an offensive lineman with our second pick, and then, in my opinion, while we needed a guard, I'm not sure that's the pick you take in the mid-first round from an impact standpoint. So, can you help calm my nerves about this draft in its totality?
Well, I understand your feelings. I mean, I think it's hard for me to contradict my thoughts on the need for an offensive lineman by saying, well, maybe they picked the wrong ones. And I think, Mike, part of our hesitation is simply because we are still scarred by things like Lamar Holmes and Peter Kahns. And that's not fair to Chris Lindstrom and Caleb McGarry to loop them in there with that, at least not yet. We hope we never will have to. But we have this feeling going in to the draft that Thomas Dimitroff and Dan Quinn, for that matter, too, don't really know how to pick offensive linemen in the first place. And when they did pick Chris Chester and Andy Levitre, for example, well, they were system fits, they were veterans, they did pretty well. Jake Matthews kind of fell in their lap, but we still go back, I do at least, to Peter Kahns and Lamar Holmes. I think guard is something you don't usually see drafted at 14. So, yeah, that was a little high. But I don't think there's any guarantee that if they had traded back even three spots to 17 before the Vikings at 18, they would have still been able to get Lindstrom if he was their number one guy. So I'm trying to have a good feeling about this, hoping that these are two guys who can be on the line for a long time. I don't think there's any doubt they were reaches. But if they reached for somebody who they really liked, hopefully they got the ones they wanted.
No, it makes sense. It's just hard to read the, you know, Falcon blogs and the things that they're asking us about as free agents. We need our defensive tackle, cornerback, right? and I look at how deep this draft was at the line of scrimmage. I think about a Greedy Williams going to the Browns. I'm like, good Lord, if the Browns surpassed the Falcons in terms of intelligence and getting quality players, I mean, Greedy Williams would have been a starter, Bill, and you could have gotten him in the late first round where the Falcons reached for an offensive tackle who himself said he was surprised to be taken in the first round because he just was thinking he was more of a mid-round pick. I mean,
yeah, but see, I didn't really like Greedy Williams. I was worried about him. There was something that bothered me about him, and he would have. I don't know if he would have been right there near where the Falcons would have picked originally in the second round. It was close, right? I think was he like 45 to Cleveland or something like that. But I mean, look, they've got a lot of needs, and I don't think the draft is ever going to solve all their needs, no matter what. But you know, Mike, we have complained about their line of scrimmage issues forever, and we just have to hope that with the combination of Carpenter and the other guys they brought in for that line of scrimmage, and now these draft picks that they have fixed it. Because if they protect Matt Ryan, he can do damage. We saw that 3 years ago when they had the same five offensive linemen stay the entire year and lead them all the way to the Super Bowl. That's a big reason that Matt Ryan won the MVP award. And I'm not saying they couldn't do that this year, but it had to be better than that crap they were dealing with last year. It was a mess.
Agreed. But those are first-round picks, so they better start, Bill. And that's, I think, the question I've got, right? And even this organization said, they themselves say, we don't do well with developmental picks in the offensive line and developing players. So it's hard, Bill. It really is. And like I said, I felt like Greedy. I watched him at LSU. I saw him every Saturday playing. The guy, they didn't throw at him. And, you know, I know there was knocks on his tackling and all this other stuff, but that could have been a starter for us. I don't know. You always second-guess drafts, but I just feel like, you know, I hope these guys can start and play because the value pick in the first round, those have to be starters. And I just wonder, if they don't hit on these picks, Bill, you also have those two guards they signed. So it just as a fan, it's like it just seems like, okay, now we have still more holes to fill through free agency, and do we even have any money left under the cap? That's my other question.
No, they don't have any money. I think they're still over the cap, for that matter. Mike, thank you for calling me. Look, I understand the skepticism that some are going to have about the draft. I'm trying to be a little Pollyanna and think positively of it. I wouldn't have taken Lindstrom at 14, and I was surprised they did. I think he's obviously the best guard in the draft. There's no doubt about that. If they had no trade partner to trade back 7-8 spots or even 3, if they wanted to get in front of the Vikings, if they felt Minnesota was going to take him at 18, then this is the only place they were going to take him. And when they moved back into the late first round, I was surprised. Well, I can't say I was surprised. There were a lot of rumors that was possibly going to happen. But when they picked another offensive lineman, that really surprised me, because it's like all of a sudden they're doing what we want them to do. We told them line of scrimmage. I sat here on Thursday. Line of scrimmage, and holy crap, they did it, you know? So because of that, it's hard for me even worrying that these two may not be the right ones for the line of scrimmage. We got to give them a shot, and we got to hope that they have gotten players who can be in place for a long time. I don't think McGarry's going to start off this start. I think Zambrano is going to be the right tackle starter at least early on. But you've got to hope, especially since Zambrano has been more of a role player and a tweener, that at the minimum in 2020, Russ, McGarry takes over at right tackle and kind of bookends with Jake Matthews, and that Lindstrom can go right in there at guard with Carpenter pretty immediately. But you also have to think about the Alex Mack factor of how long is Alex Mack going to continue to be effective at his age. We saw Todd McClure lose a little bit there when he got toward the mid-30s. You don't know how, I mean, mid-30s offensive linemen and centers, it can be effective, but they're going to lose some effectiveness, and that's a big position. Hell, we saw it when McClure, the gap between McClure and Mack, there was trash there for several years. So, you know, that's what we've been preaching for a long time, and hopefully they've helped cure it.
Yeah, they've addressed the offensive line. And I'll say this to the people worried about the evaluation portion of it. That's every position. So it doesn't matter who they took with the 14th pick. We're going to worry about the evaluation because they seem to get it wrong so much, right? I mean, that was just kind of an inevitable thing. But I'm glad they're addressing the offensive line. If they're correct in their evaluation, and I stress the word if, what you have for the future is, remember, Sombrero can slide inside and play guard, and Lidstrom can play center, and Mac is 33 years old. So they've, and you've just spent $150 million on a quarterback who's in his mid-30s. So if you've got to protect that guy. So, I mean, I like the vision, and I like what they're trying to do. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's going to work either. But there's who were they going to take with the 14th pick that we were going to come in here and jump up and down for joy? Because let's be honest, the second tier of this draft stretched from about the 7th or 8th pick to about the 40th pick. So they made the move to get the guys they wanted. They took Lidstrom in front of the Vikings, who took a center at 18. They took McGarry, a tackle, in front of three tackles taken in the top 10 in the second round. So they got their guys. And I've said it yesterday, I'm going to say it again without trying to laugh. We just have to trust them.
And we also talked on Wednesday and Thursday about how people were all over the draft boards, how the kid from Cody Ford from Oklahoma was all over the draft board. You know, Jason Butt was saying the Falcons may take him at 14. We saw him as late as the, like, second 10 picks in the second round. He wound up in the second part of the second round. So with that in mind, if you had those kind of players all over the board, that means their board included players who may have been higher on their board than other boards.
And that's the thing you have to remember, because people keep using the term reach. The irony is, if they'd have taken Cody Ford with the 14th pick and then gotten Juwan Taylor with the 31st pick, everybody would be jumping up and down for joy and talking about what a great draft it was, when in reality, those would have been reaches. Because of where they ended up going in the draft.
Because of where they ended up going. And that interesting. But that in itself proves of how when we were going into the draft, we were saying, God, this is a scary draft because these players are all over the place. Greedy Williams, D. Orlando, God bless him, was forever saying over and over and over again, 14, Greedy Williams, Greedy Williams. It's like, who else besides D. Orlando's got Greedy Williams going 14? And he wound up going 45 or something like that, because that's how the range was for those players, over and over, and different positions too, all over the place. It was that kind of draft, which is a dangerous draft to be in, to be honest with you. All right, we're going to take a break, come back with the Taco Shed and Warner Robins. We're leading up to Braves, Padres baseball. We'll get you ready for that, talk about tonight's starting pitchers, all that and more as we continue on this Tuesday edition of the Bill Shanks Show.
Bulldogs, Falcons, Yellow Jackets, Hawks, Eagles. From the heart of Georgia, it's the Bill Shanks Show.
Hour number four of our show. Welcome back as we get you ready for Braves, Padres baseball at SunTrust Park. Game two of the series between Atlanta and San Diego. Last game of the month of April, Braves. We're, of course, 0-3 in March, 14-11 so far in April. So tonight could give them a very good record for the first full month of the year and really give them a good record after that 0-3 start with the sweep by the Phillies to start the season. Braves will have Julio Teheran on the mound for them this evening. 2-3 is his record, 5.40 ERA. Chris Paddock, one of the young Padres pitchers who has done very well so far, 1-1 with a 1.67 earned run average. Braves have two starters out of the lineup tonight. Ender Inciarte still out with that leg injury. Braves expect him to be fine. Brian Sicker says he'll be in the lineup tomorrow. But Josh Donaldson was a late scratch in the lineup, and he is out with a calf soreness. And so he is not going to play tonight, and unfortunately, that is going to make the lineup a little bit different with Dansby Swanson hitting second, which may be a good thing. May not need to say unfortunately with that little situation. Ozzy and then Dansby at the top lineup, followed by Freddie and Acuna. Marquez fifth, then Camargo sixth, McCann seventh, and then Matt Joyce will play left field and bat eighth for Atlanta with Julio Teheran on the mound. Braves coming off a win last night over the Padres. The very good performance from Mike Soroka. And there was something in the notes that's really something, I think, as far as showing how well Soroka has done.
Soroka went six innings last night, allowing one earned run with a career-high eight strikeouts to collect the victory. Soroka has now allowed one run earned in each of his three starts this season, and for his career, going back to last year, has allowed one earned run or fewer in six of his eight starts. No other Atlanta pitcher had as many such starts among his first eight career games, current pitcher, and Larry McWilliams, Derek Lilliquist, and Pat Jarvis all have five such starts among their first eight career games. So there you go. I mean, that is pretty impressive for that young man. He also extended his consecutive inning streak without allowing a home run to 36.1 innings of work. The only major league starting pitcher with a longer set streak is Marcus Stroman with Toronto, who has to give up a home run in 39.1 innings. So Soroka did very well. Braves got a save from Jacob Webb, who was an 18th round draft pick out of Tabor College in Kansas and had 18 saves in AA and AAA last year. Did very well. Got invited to big league camp, impressed them. And again, Russ, I know he's pitched two straight games Sunday and Monday. But if they get in a safe situation tonight, it'll probably be Minter. But I wouldn't be surprised if Snick goes with Webb, would you?
Well, I mean, you're trying to win a baseball game, so you ask yourself the question, who do you trust? And right now, if I'm Brian Snicker and somebody's asking me, okay, who do you trust at the end of your bullpen right now? It's Webb and Luke Jackson are the answer to my question. I mean, Blevins, because he's a veteran, I'll put him in there against lefties. Minter, I'll put him in there against lefties, but... And as much as I want to say Minter is the answer to who do I trust, I mean, after he was taken down a couple of games ago, a decision which I get, I can't say Minter.
Minter's ERA is 9.35.
I mean, that's, there you go.
That's kind of all you need to know about the hesitation of what to do with him.
Yeah.
But you know he's got the stuff to do well. We've seen it. It's just inconsistent. Tonight he may be great. Tomorrow, if he was great, he may wet the bed. Pick the click time, Russ. Who are you taking?
Give me Dansby in the two hole.
Damn it, you took mine.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right, since you do that, I'm going to take, how about another home run from Matt Joyce?
There we go.
He's done well so far in limited time. Let's hope Julio pitches well. Let's hope the Braves can get another victory over San Diego. Thank you very much for being with us from the Taco Shed here in Warner Robins. For Russ Brown, I'm Bill Shanks. Have a great night. Braves baseball is next on the Superstations.